I'm Dave DeWitt. This is Tested from WUNC, a daily look at how North Carolina is dealing with COVID-19 and what we're learning about ourselves in the face of a global crisis. Today, talking science. During this pandemic, we've seen some effective science communicators, like Dr. Anthony Fauci, talking here on the Today Show about the drug trial for remdesivir.
Well, it's a really important proof of concept because this is the first very highly powered, about 1,100 individuals, and it was a placebo-controlled, randomized trial, which I've been talking about for some time now, which is really the gold standard of how you prove something is safe and either works or doesn't work.
But we've also seen some less effective science communication, like our president back in late March.
This, whatever they want to call it, you can call it a germ, you can call it a flu, you can call it a virus, you can call it many different names. I'm not sure anybody even knows what it is.
Just to be clear, scientists have known since December that the novel coronavirus is, in fact, a virus. There's perhaps never been a time where effective and accurate science communication has been more crucial. It's become, quite frankly, life and death for tens of thousands of people. It's important that we, the non-scientists, be engaged listeners and think critically. But it's also vital that those communicating the science be honest, clear, and use language we lay people can understand. And that's not as easy as it might seem. Holden Thorpe has a reputation as a highly effective communicator. He's the editor-in-chief of Science, one of the leading scientific journals in the world. Before that, he was a chemist, the provost at Washington University in St. Louis, and the chancellor at UNC Chapel Hill. We start today with Thorpe talking about his current role and the importance of communicating science effectively during the COVID-19 pandemic.
That's a really important question, and especially right now. I think thinking about pre-coronavirus, we really viewed our audience as being mostly other scientists. So we're a general science journal and we have news. And in the way we think about what is important is, you know, what is something that a researcher who isn't in the specific field of the research article or the news story, what would they be interested in? And that's kind of where we see our place in the continuum of publications. I think now with coronavirus, we have an additional challenge, which is that people are consuming science and scientific research in so many new ways that we also view our role as being very important in saying these are the things that are out there that we have subjected to our peer review process and we're willing to put our weight behind and our stamp on. And, you know, that is very important right now because there are a lot of things that are being released in the media or unreviewed papers that go on things we call preprint servers that are people are taking and running with, and in our view, most of the time prematurely.
Hmm. Speaking about the importance of science communication, we all watch the White House briefings, and we see two renowned scientists, Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci, walking what seems to be an impossible tightrope between communicating science and the political realities that are happening around them. What do you see when you watch them?
I see two people in agony. I mean, I think that they're in a very, very difficult situation. They are trying to stay there because we need some scientists at the table. And if either of them were asked to leave, I'm not sure anyone would be invited to take their place. So we're very reliant on them. I have voiced strong support for both of them. I think Dr. Birx is having a hard time. She's being asked to support a lot of Trump's statements or kind of walk them back or put them in context. Mm-hmm. And I feel for her. There's part of me that wants her to drop the mic and walk out, but there are consequences from that. And so we, at this point, we kind of have to trust her judgment that she's doing the right things to stay there and help. But it's a very challenging position that they're in.
And it's not necessarily new when we think of the Trump administration since they entered office. You know, a lot of the positions they've taken have often been anti-science. You know, Rush Limbaugh once called government, academia, science, and media the four corners of deceit. You've held prominent positions in three of those fields. How hard is it to advocate for the importance of scientific research in a country where those kinds of views are now so widely held and held so strongly by the president?
Yeah, I mean, the good news is that if you look at surveys from Pew or somebody like that, you'll see strong support for science is still there in both parties. But it's very soft on the Republican side, because once you start to dig into it, then you find, you know, people who want to, you know, they trust their doctor and they're grateful for medical care, but then they want to ignore us on climate change or vaccines or something like this. So that's a constant struggle. It's frankly a struggle that's always been there. I mean, if you look at, well, not always, but it's been there for decades. If you look at the environment, for example, when Earth Day was launched, and we just had the anniversary, the 50th anniversary, the Nixon administration was quite environmentalist. Barry Goldwater was a very big environmentalist. And then when Reagan became president, I think data became available showing that there was a political advantage in attacking science. And that has been unfortunate because, you know, we have a lot of challenges with climate change and the environment where we need to be doing a lot more. That's a crisis very similar to COVID, moving much more slowly, but just as important, if not more so. So the political polarization around science has been very unfortunate, and we're seeing the effects of that on fast forward now with everything that's going on because, you know, we have this whole saga, I think it's mostly behind us now, related to hydroxychloroquine. Fascinating situation. There is a solid scientific rationale for using hydroxychloroquine. I can understand why Trump was hopeful about it because unlike a lot of these other drugs, there's a huge supply of hydroxychloroquine. And if it worked, we'd have a realistic chance of getting it to everybody. But we don't prescribe drugs for things until we've done randomized control trials. And those things are very important to science scientists and normally kind of happen in the background. And when there's a shortcut that's attempted, you know, that creates a lot of confusion. And we're seeing a lot of that kind of thing right now. And again, that's why we feel at Science we have such a solemn responsibility to make sure that we put things through our normal process, regardless of how much pressure we're under to do things faster. We are going a lot faster, but we're still implementing our process because there's a reason why science has developed the practices that we've developed over the last couple hundred years. And it's not appropriate for politicians to pretend like they can somehow reinvent all that on the fly.
You mentioned something there about the president being hopeful about hydroxychloroquine and that not necessarily being a good thing or necessarily being a bad thing, but being sort of against the scientific process. I mean, what do you say to regular people who aren't doctors or scientists and maybe aren't as familiar with the scientific process and the length that sometimes that takes to give them hope that we will eventually get through this?
Oh, yeah, I'm extremely hopeful. I mean, I see most of the science that you see or a lot of it comes through my screen before it goes to wherever it goes. So when you see somebody on CNN talking, most of the time I've looked at whatever it is that they're talking about, or if it was important and it didn't come to us, it came to another important journal where I probably also took a look at it. And the rate at which we're conquering this is unprecedented. The description of the virus happened starting in January. By the middle of February, we had the structure of the spike protein. Now we have the structures of most of the important proteins in the virus. The epidemiology has moved very quickly. I mean, you might remember at the beginning of this, there was a lot of focus on handshaking and the virus spreading on surfaces.
Right.
We now know the virus mostly spreads through the air, which is why the masks are so important. And I think we're learning who experiences severe disease, but we're at the early stages of that. If we could get to the point where we knew who would end up with severe disease, particularly among the younger, healthier folks, that would give us a huge advantage. And then as we're talking about, a lot of these therapeutic approaches are moving along quite quickly. I'm optimistic that we'll get an antibody that binds to the spike protein and helps us manage disease. That's probably the thing that could happen the fastest. And the vaccine development is, again, going the fastest it's ever gone. There are lots of political and logistical challenges with the vaccine, but I'm hopeful that they'll get worked out. So I believe science will conquer this. I think those who are out there, you know, what we need is time and collaboration. And so we need the nations of the world to work together, and we need time to work this out. I know there are a lot of people hurting financially, and so these are complicated questions as to how we reopen. But if everybody would wear their mask and maybe even a face shield, I know it's kind of an awkward thing to wear, but if you have a mask and a face shield, you're in pretty good shape. And if you're outside, you're even better. So as we reopen, if people would wear masks and face shields and stay outside as much as they could, we got an excellent chance of getting things going again here while we continue to buy time for the scientists to do our thing.
Holden Thorpe is the editor-in-chief of Science and the former chancellor at UNC Chapel Hill. WUNC has canceled our spring fund drive so that we can keep the focus and our efforts on reporting and delivering news on this pandemic without any interruptions. But listener support is vital to our future and will give our station the resources we need to continue to bring you the coverage you depend on. If you're able to support WUNC now, please give what you can. Every dollar truly makes a difference. You can give online at WUNC.org, and thanks. That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Dave DeWitt. Will Michaels is our producer, Lindsay Foster Thomas is the executive producer, and Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.